Hello, everyone. This is Andrea Von Kampen, and welcome to my podcast, It's My Party. This is a podcast where I sit down with women who I find to be interesting and creative, and we have meaningful conversations. So, if that sounds good to you, let's get started. Today on the podcast, we have singer-songwriter Ira Wolf. With three studio albums to share, Ira has performed on stages across the US, the UK, Scandinavia, Australia, New Zealand, and Southeast Asia since she began touring in 2014. She was also named one of Spotify's Best of Folk Americana 2016 artists, and she is one of my good friends. In this episode, Ira and I unpack how she developed a love of music from a young age, her college years, and how she got started performing. I learn all about van life and Go Westy, and in general, how to be a rugged person. We discuss the challenges we faced the past 2 years, being mostly confined to one place and not being able to play shows. We chat about the creative process of songwriting, and Ira tells me about her recent travels to Morocco, and there is so much more. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe and leave a comment. Without further ado, Ira Wolf. Well, thanks for coming on my podcast, Ira. How have you been? Yeah. I feel like I haven't seen you in so long. I mean, I obviously follow you on social media, but what's new right now?
Oh, man, it has been a long time. I feel like this last 2 years, pandemic life has just like ceased reality. It feels very, very long. And then at the same time, it feels like it's been a week since we hung out.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of scary. Like, I think about things and I'm like, oh, that happened, what, like a couple months ago? And then it's like, no, Andrew, that was 2 years ago.
I know. I was just at my producer's house today and we were going over some songs and kind of like digging through some things. And the notes that I pulled up for it was Ira 2020 album. And I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
This has been stalled.
It's been so bizarre. And did you buy your house right before the pandemic hit?
I did. Yeah. That's I bought crazy. It like a couple months before.
Oh. And so, then were you pretty much stuck in Nashville throughout the majority of the last 2 years?
Yeah. Yeah. So I bought this place and then I had one tour over in Europe before.
Oh, COVID. Yes. So
it was like I bought the house, I went on tour, and then it was like while I was in the UK, there were these whispers.
Yes. And this was the tour of the car tire. Is that right?
Yes. Okay.
That was the most stressful Instagram story series ever for anyone listening. Ira's in the pitch black darkness of Scotland or something, like on an abandoned road, like, well, my tire just broke. and then it was like someone can be here in the next 17 hours.
Oh my gosh, that was such I think like because I'm in the van so often and that breaks down all the time, like breaking down on the road just is not a big deal to me. But that one in particular, I think like, so what happened was, it was raining really terribly and like part of the road had washed out. And so I hit these like giant rocks and both of my tires blew. And I was like, oh man. And at first I was like, ah, whatever, you know, I've dealt with worse. And then it very quickly became clear that I had not dealt with worse. Like, this was the first time that I was like, didn't have cell reception where I was.
It's so stressful.
Like, it was the middle of winter in Scotland. So there's like nobody around. I like walked a mile to this campground just to see if I could find
somebody. Were you so scared walking that mile?
It's funny. I feel like I don't get scared until after something. Like, I just have to like pretend that I'm really brave and I'm like, totally. Oh, yeah, it's not a big deal because there's like nothing else I could do at that point. Yeah, so right. I was just like, okay, everything's fine. I'm a total boss. Like, just walking along in the middle of the night in the rain in Scotland on some back road highway.
Oh my gosh.
It was, there was like one point that night because it did take several hours for somebody to get to me. And like, I finally was able, I just drove on the rim of the car, which cost me a lot of money. later. But I was like, I have to get at least somewhere that I can like pull off the road, get service, whatever.
Yes, yes.
And I did that and I was able to like call my mom. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And that was when I started like panicking a little bit, being like, yes. Oh man, if I'm stuck here like literally all night because they can't get a tow to me.
Oh, so bad. All right. Well, let's start from the beginning. Let's start from the beginning and see how we got to this night in Scotland. So as I recall, you grew up in Montana, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And did you know from the beginning that you were going to make music? How did this all start?
I did. My mom always likes to say that I sang before I talked. Like, I just loved music as a kid. When I was, I think, 5, my great-grandmother bought my family a piano because she was really into music. And I just became obsessed. Like, I remember, like, my punishment was that I couldn't play the piano. So, like, if I didn't clean my room, my mom would be like, can't play the piano till you pick up your toys. Or.
And were you just, like, making up stuff? Did you have a teacher? Like, what was playing the piano at that point? What did that look like?
I did have a teacher, so I was doing like all the, what is it, like Alfred's or?
Oh yeah, I think I know what that like, book looks like.
Those little books, you know what it looks like.
Yeah, totally.
I was doing those and I had a teacher for several years, but I was also kind of like making stuff up. Mm-hmm. And I think I had taken piano lessons for, 7 years maybe, when my teacher realized I couldn't read music. Oh, no. And I had just been like kind of faking it the whole time and memorizing stuff. And, like, I play by ear really well, but I cannot read at all.
So naturally then play guitar.
Exactly. Never know what chord I'm playing. Don't know what key I'm in. Oh, but I so fake funny. It real well.
So it's funny because like I sang soprano and choir and I played guitar, and like by the time I got to college, like I couldn't read music well. It's like I never had to read music well. So did you go to college then?
I did. I did not know. I knew I wanted to do music like my whole life, but I wasn't necessarily a songwriter or anything like modern. Like I did like the classical training vocal stuff and like competitions, and I started playing guitar when I was like 16 or 17. And then I went to college technically for opera in Montana.
What?
Just because that was like the next like vocal step. Like I didn't know.
Are there some things that we can link below that show you singing opera?
Okay. Those years are far behind me.
So you go to college for opera and then...
I studied it for like 2.5 or 3 years.
Wow.
And it was really fascinating. I actually enjoyed it a lot, but the further I got into it, the more I was like, this is not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I had started songwriting quite a lot in college. And I had a really great vocal coach who I think picked up on that and was kind of like, yeah, she doesn't want to sing opera. So he started like, hey, why don't you bring your guitar in and like sing me something you wrote? And so I started getting into that, and that kind of led me to Berklee.
Okay.
Which I hilariously had never even heard of until I was applying.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a Montana thing. Like that's
it's
like if you're sort of like
a little sheltered,
like raised in a small town in Montana. Oh man, no offense to Montana people. Absolutely no offense.
Montana,
I'm just basing this also off of like what I know of your childhood, which is more than you've told the listener. So just know that this is not any offense to Montana. This is just offensive to Ira. Okay. No, I'm joking. Okay, so.
Yeah.
So anyways,
true. Like I didn't grow up with like, my parents loved that I was into music, but they also like had no idea even where to like direct me.
That makes it tough. That makes it really
tough. So yeah, they were kind of like, I don't know, like sing at these competitions and I don't know, go to college for opera. And...
So you transferred from Montana to Berklee then?
Mm-hmm.
What year was that? For you, was that like junior or senior year? What was that?
It would have been my junior year.
Okay.
Yeah, I transferred out and started studying music therapy and songwriting. And I was there for a semester before I ran out of money. And then <Yep. laughs> I went back to Montana for a little bit. Didn't go back to school, but just went kind of back to Missoula, back to my comfort zone. Started a band there very, very briefly. I fronted a bluegrass band for a little bit. And then decided that I wanted to be somewhere that I would be like surrounded by creative types. And a lot of the people I was working with in Montana at that time were still in school or had just started new careers and like weren't necessarily focused on music as the primary piece of their life, which was a lot of fun. But yeah, I wanted like to level up a little bit.
Totally.
And yeah, so that brought me to Nashville.
Crazy. And is it there? Is it there in Nashville that you made your first album? Your first album, was it Fickle Heart? Is that right?
It is, yeah.
Okay. So do you move to Nashville and then make this record?
I had like started writing it while I was in Montana. And some of those songs actually were like from the band days.
Okay.
And then I think it was after my very first tour. I like moved down here. I started working as a nanny full time. And I was like, oh, I was so busy and just not doing music at all. And finally, I think I'd been here for like 9 months. And a friend of mine was kind of feeling the same way. Like we both moved here at the same time. We were both working like, you know, side hustle gigs that were paying the bills, but like not at all part of the music industry. And he and I just got to chatting and we're like, how could we do this? How could we just like make it? How could we make money doing music? And at that time, we didn't know that like people just toured, like you could just go on tour. But we were like, what the heck? Like, let's try it. And we booked a month long tour at like all these coffee shops.
And did you guys just self book this whole thing?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, we just
and how
like,
was that first tour?
Oh, it was miserable. It was so bad.
In the month-long tour, how many days off did you have?
We had 2 days off.
What? Oh wow, that's a ton of shows.
It was insane. Again, we were just like complete little baby idiots. Like we had no idea.
Where exactly did you tour?
We went from I think we did the South. Yeah, we started in Georgia, I think. So we drove from Nashville to like Atlanta or Savannah or something. And we did like Georgia and the Carolinas and worked our way up through Virginia all the way to Boston and New York. And I think we went up to Buffalo.
Okay.
And then kind of worked back from there.
Wow.
Kind of across the Midwest.
That's sort of how I feel like those first tours are, though. Like, you just sort of go and it's like actually terrible. And there's very few redeeming qualities. But when you get home, you feel like you've like gone to war or something. Like, you feel so accomplished. So,
especially like at that age, because I was 23 maybe when I started doing that, which is a much younger version of myself. And we would like, at that point, it was just a party. Like we weren't like making money. We were playing to no one, like totally empty rooms. So we were just like taking any bright spot we could get. And that was usually like people buying us shots and we'd be like, fine, I guess we'll just drink. And so we were just like partying every night.
And at this point, is your album out yet? Or are you just touring on songs that have not been released
yet? No, I was just playing. I think I had this. I had like recorded these little like EPs through GarageBand. And I was hawking those.
Wow. After this tour, you come back to Nashville, poorer than when you left, and then do you make your record then? Is that the next step in your career? Okay. Yeah.
And so then, we actually...
Yeah, keep going.
By some like really I don't know how, but we came back with money.
Okay.
Like we, I mean, granted, we were like sleeping in the car every night. Okay. Like we didn't spend any money other than gas. Like that was, gas was all we would pay for. And then we were like busking a lot. And somehow we both came back with like a couple $100s.
That's great.
And we were like, oh.
So this is
we could like make money if we kept doing this. And that was when I was like, okay, if I'm going to tour again, I need
a record.
Not garbage music.
So where do you record your first record?
I recorded that here in Nashville at Sound Emporium.
Okay. And then how did you know like how to release it? Did you do it all by yourself?
Trying to remember. I must have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't working with anybody at that point. And yeah, it was another just massive learning curve where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I guess I'll just do it. And
then that record, that did well, right? Like on streaming and stuff.
That one didn't, the second one was the one that like kind of put me on the map
really
for
well.
Streaming.
And when that happened, were you like, what was your reaction? When you started to see it doing well, because I don't know, like I sort of know how I felt and I just felt very surprised and confused. Maybe like with being in Nashville, you were a bit hipper to how it worked. But like when I first saw that like Train Song had 10,000 streams, I like literally just thought people in Nebraska were listening to it. Like, I mean, I was so dumb. I knew nothing. So like what, just tell me what your reaction was.
Oh yeah. I was completely baffled. I thought it was like a glitch. Like I thought something was wrong because the first album, like in my eyes then, was quote unquote doing well. Like it was getting like a couple thousand streams.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's huge.
Well, and am I wrong in thinking that Fickle Heart has done well, that song?
It has. Like,
and that's on your first record, right?
It is, yeah.
Okay, cool. Cool. But at the time, that wasn't like leading the charge.
No. Okay. That was like maybe a few thousand streams a year.
Okay. Wow.
And then I put out the second record, and I had been touring, I think, for two or three years when I put out the second album called Honest. And that one, I had just partnered with Go Westy, my van sponsorship.
Yes.
So they like lent me the van to tour in for 6 months. And I had
just
started that one. I was doing this whole
How did you get connected with them? Like, did you just always know that you wanted to travel across the country in a Westy? Like, I feel like the answer is yes. I feel like you're the kind of person that's like, yeah.
I think part of me always knew that was going to be a thing.
But how did that come to be? Because, you know, that has now become such a...
it's such a huge part of my life.
A huge part of your life and your story. So...
yeah, that one... So this was like, again, back before the day of like influencers, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That wasn't a thing yet. But I had some friends that were living in a Westy van and they were traveling through South America doing this photography project. And it just looked so cool. And I just was in awe of everything they were doing. And I was like, I want that. And they had kind of dipped into this like, I guess they were influencers before influencing was a thing, but they had this sponsorship through Go Westy, and I kind of was just, again, like too dumb or naive to like question whether
those were the days.
Just being like, why the heck not? Why wouldn't this amazing company just give me a van to tour around in? And so I reached out and they were like, yeah, this sounds like exactly what we want to do. Like, we're just starting this music
That's
program.
Incredible. So did they give you Ruby to tour in? Like, was that the van?
They gave me Ruby. So I toured in Ruby for 6 months.
And then, did you live out of Ruby?
I did.
See, I want to get into van life as well because it's such a different way of life than what
I'm used
to. Oh my
gosh. When you're touring. Well, and like at that point, I had been living in a Buick Rendezvous.
Okay, so this was an upgrade.
So I was like camping, like I've got my tent with me on tour and I would like camp at like rest areas. And again, things that I would never do at this age.
Mm-hmm.
But back then I was just like, dumb and broke enough to be like, whatever, I'll sleep in my car at this Walmart and then I'll go play a show.
Yes.
And so like when they gave me the van to tour in, it was such an upgrade. Like,
yeah, totally.
It was a real bed and like I could cook in there and it was, it felt a lot safer than like being in a car or a tent.
And for those 6 months that you had Ruby through this sponsorship, was it mostly shows or was it like a healthy mix of shows and like, you know, outdoorsy stuff? And then were you still self-booking everything?
I have almost always self-booked. I think there was like a very short time period, and I think it was during that tour that I had a management company helping.
Okay.
And so it was kind of half and half there where like they would book half of it, I would fill in the gaps. But it was mostly shows. I didn't find, honestly, until the pandemic, I still had not found like the right balance of
totally
touring. So I was still doing like 5 nights a week at that point, which yeah, it was way too much.
And so after that 6 months is over, how do you keep Ruby indefinitely?
So I had to give the van back initially.
Oh, wow.
Which was so hard because it had become like my little oasis on the road, you know? And so I gave it back. And then that was like when Spotify had started randomly doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And which I was completely confused by. I didn't like do anything special.
Yeah.
To like try and like get my name to curators. I didn't know there were curators. Like I didn't know how any of it worked. But it just so happened that there was a curator who had found my music. I don't think she came to a show before that. So I don't know how she found my music. But yeah, she had kind of like just put me on some playlists and all of a sudden my plays went through the roof and that like started paying some bills and like helped me get out of student debt and all this stuff. And so I was able to save up enough that I could go back to Go Westie the next year and be like, hey, I want to reunite with Ruby. And they were like,
give me my car back.
Like, she is my home. I need her. I put her on the front of my album. Can I please have her?
That's amazing. That's incredible how that all worked out. So how was it being and still being a solo female traveler? I think that like, I don't know. I was just watching a documentary yesterday about how Americans are so fearful, like because of all the news we consume and we're just sort of like taught to be afraid. But being a solo female traveler is something I am truly afraid of. Like just the thought of like leaving in a van for 6 months and just being like, okay, hopefully this all goes well. I mean, what are your thoughts on it?
Oh, that's such a big question. Because I think it's natural. And maybe it's just because of the society we grow up in here in America where like, yeah, we see all these like worst case scenarios on TV, right?
And so we're like, we listen to like Crime Junkies and My Favorite Murder. Totally. Like we consume terrifying things.
I'm all about those like and then, mystery like why am I scared? Podcasts. Yeah, and then we wonder. So I think it's natural to be like a little afraid.
Mm-hmm.
But it used to bother me a lot more.
Okay.
When I first started touring, I was bothered by how often people would ask me if I'm afraid. Like every time I would play a show, people would be like, oh my gosh, aren't you afraid? Aren't you? And I'm like, stop.
Like afraid that you're alone or afraid that you're in a van alone? Like just the
whole
vibe?
All of it. Just the like, you're a woman, you're alone, you're traveling, just these like, and I think back then I also was bothered by it because I would think like, I know a lot of men that are traveling alone.
Totally.
And they're not getting that question. Like, oh, aren't you afraid? Like all their questions were like, what's your favorite place you've been? Or like,
yeah, right.
And so I feel like, again, our society kind of puts that on women of like, you should be afraid. Like you should be scared. We're all scared. So why aren't you scared?
Yeah.
And I really wasn't that often back then. Again, naivety, young I don't know. But I wasn't afraid. Like, I'd listen to my gut, and if something fell off, I would leave. And thankfully, I never, like, had any.
Do you feel like van life community is, like, really supportive of women?
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting because, like, van life community has changed so much since the pandemic that I,
okay,
like, don't even know how I identify within it right now.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, like, the van life community that I knew was, yeah, hugely supportive of women.
That's
being
so great.
Alone and, like, yeah, it was great. I feel like it's, like, gentrified almost recently.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, I know very little about the van life community, so you could really unpack this and explain it to me if you wanted to, because I have
a whole...
you're about as much as I know about van community as it gets. Look, I'll just say this. I've tried to camp twice, and both times I have made everyone pack up the tent at like 3 really? In the morning and drive home. I hate it. I hate it so much. I hate being outside at night.
Really? Is it because you're scared?
It's everything. It's like the minute I realize, like, okay, I'm not going to be able to fall asleep. Mm. I hate that I'm there. And I'm not like really, I don't know. I guess I'm not really like scared to camp. I just hate getting bad sleep. And so then I just like want it to be over. Like I just want it to be over so badly.
I get that.
I don't know. I am not like, I'm not the type of person that like, I'm not like good at like roughing it. You know, I've never been good at roughing it.
Yeah, I love roughing it.
I know you I'm do. Like,
I was going to say from our tour together, you know that I'm a little rougher.
Absolutely. We really are a good complementary pair for each other.
We complement each other well. You tell me when we should not stay in a sketchy hotel. And I tell you when we should like go for a walk.
Exactly. Okay, so back to van life. Maybe things have shifted a bit more since the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it's not really like necessarily the same as it was.
Yeah, it does feel different. Like there's a lot of it's just been a huge influx of people doing it. And it seems like all those people, I think because now people are working remotely, it didn't used to be common to like run into like corporate America out on the road, you know? And now it's,
that's so weird.
It's different. Yeah. So I'm actually getting back in the van this spring and I'll be spending a little bit of time in Mexico.
Nice.
And I'm very, very excited. I've always heard for the entire time I've been doing van life, I've heard that you need to go to Mexico. And I've just never been able to make it work. And finally, this spring, I'm going to do it. And that's, I will say, like, I do have some fear getting back into it. Like, I don't know if it's because I've been in Nashville for such a long time or because I traveled with a partner for so many years that I kind of like lost a little bit of that independent boldness that came easier before. So yeah, I'm feeling like the jitters of knowing that I'm going back into the van and that I'm gonna be, I won't be alone. I'll have my dog. But
you'll take Winnie.
I'll take Winnie with me.
So such a cute dog.
Oh, she's
love
a great
girl.
Great little nugget.
So are you gonna drive around like most of Mexico or do you have like a specific place that you're going to be staying for a while?
I haven't decided yet. I have a few friends that I'd like to meet up with in Baja. And I'm not putting too many expectations out. There's talks of potentially doing a creative project with some of the people that I met in Morocco.
Cool.
But we don't know where that's going to be in Mexico yet.
That's going to be so amazing.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how this goes.
Hello, it's my party listeners. I am taking a quick break from this week's episode to tell you all about our sponsor, Agora Art and Ceramic Studio. Agora is a small woman-run business that makes ceramics, jewelry, and paintings. I am a big fan of Agora. I currently own 2 mugs, and they are my favorite mugs. I have the cloud mug and the mug with the little village on it that I got at Christmas time. And I'm actually thinking of just getting rid of all other mugs and only buying Agora because it's all I drink out of. So if you want to do this too, if you want to start your Agora mug collection, you can go to agorastudio.art and use the code PARTY15 to receive 15% off your purchase from now through August 1st. That is agorastudio.art. Also, feel free to follow Agora on Instagram, TikTok, and sign up for the Agora mailing list at Agora Studio Art. That is AGORASTUDIO.ART. Okay, now let's get back to the episode.
Okay, so a couple of questions just about your songwriting process, creativity.
Sure.
So you have put out 3 full lengths. You're working on one right now. What in general would you say is your writing process if you had to describe it?
I always find this question really funny because I don't think I have one.
Yes.
So if I think about what the process is, honestly, it's like just whatever my mental health is doing. that's kind of the process. It's songwriting is very therapeutic for me. So I've noticed in the times that life is going really well, it's really hard for me to write because I don't feel like I have anything that I need to process deeply, or I just haven't figured out how to do, I don't know. I process my positive emotions by like being outside and being active and not in music. Like music has always been like my melancholy thing. Even what I listen to, like I don't listen to a lot of like upbeat, happy music. Like everything I listen to is like sad folk songs. So that's kind of how my writing goes. It's usually when things are not going so well and I need to process it. And then it happens very, very quickly. Like I'll sit down and like, I guess it's been a month or two ago, a couple months ago, that I came back to Nashville and I was just having a really hard night. And I grabbed my guitar and like 6 songs just like fell out.
Wow.
Where I've had writer's block for like several years.
And is that the context for most of this new album then?
A lot of it, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah,
oh, that's so exciting to have new music.
I am really excited. I'm like, it's such a strange time to be like processing a breakup so publicly, but also being like, but this is like, you guys know, you get it, you've felt it.
Totally. And
which is another aspect of like knowing that it might, that people will hear it. Like I think when I first started writing songs, they were just for me.
Okay.
And I, being vulnerable and honest, was like, fine, because I'm just writing in my journal, you know? And now that it's on this playing field,
it's on
being
display.
Like, oh crap, like this could be listened to a million times. How much do I want to share?
Oh, it's so fascinating. And especially since you have been so open and honest with the people who follow you about what's going on in your life. That's a really interesting interesting thought around this new record. So where are you? Oh, really? Where are you in the process right now of making that?
I finished writing it, which I'm really excited about. So we have about 10 songs, give or take a few. And I, like I said, I just met up with my producer today to kind of just talk scheduling, talk production, talk players. And we're supposed to kind of start doing pre-production next week.
Nice. Are you going to try to get this done before you go to Mexico?
Ideally, I would really like to.
Yeah.
So the goal is to like get everything, at least like the basics laid down through February.
Okay.
And then if we need some like overdub stuff, that can happen later in March or April, and I will just, you know, work from the road, but all of my parts will be,
that'll be good,
taken care of.
Who arranges, like who's gonna arrange this record? Do you arrange the parts? Does somebody else arrange the parts?
I do not. That is not,
I don't either.
Like, I have a really,
we're just
hard
sad
time
girls with
like
sad thoughts.
Exactly. I'm like,
everybody else do the rest.
I could put some sad stuff on a guitar, but the other stuff. No, my producer does all of my arranging for the most part.
Cool. Very cool.
His name's Kevin Harper. He's a miracle worker and a genius, and I adore
That's
him.
That's great. Have you worked with him on your other stuff then?
He did my last record.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So I've worked with different people each time. And then when I found Kevin, we had been friends for years. And as I was looking for someone to do the last one, I had kind of just like forgotten that that was something he did. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, duh. Like, why wouldn't I work with someone that's a close friend?
That's so great.
And he's been fantastic. Yeah. So I'll work with him again.
Other than the Mexico trip, what does touring look like for you in 2022? Are you going to try to get back at it? Are you scared because everything just keeps getting canceled? Like, what is your philosophy behind this?
Girl, I have been so slow to start booking again because I had such a hard time the very first round in 2020 when all of those, when that whole year was canceled, because it had all been booked. Like I typically book 6 months to a year to even 2 years in advance. So, I mean, I had all these plans and like everything set up, and that's how I've lived for like 7 years, was having everything, you know, planned week by week. And when it all got canceled in 2020, the first time, I did not handle that well. Like my mental health took a huge dive, and yeah, it's just a lot of work and a lot of emotion that goes into planning something that so large, and then to just like watch it disappear.
Crumble. Is so hard. Publicly, of course.
So yeah. So I haven't booked anything. I played a couple of festivals last summer. I think I played three different festivals that all felt really safe. And that was great. But yeah, going from like hundreds of shows a year to three shows in a year.
That's wow.
I'm really like fingers crossed. I would love to tour. It would probably be in the fall. Like that's my goal right now, because again, like I would need to start planning right now.
Totally. I'm with
you. Just kinda like wait and see. Like
totally.
It keeps, like it feels like it's just round after round that just when it starts to feel safe.
Yeah,
another variant comes up and everything.
Well, tell me about Experience House then. It's like insane that you were able to travel there in the midst of all of this. What is this? How did you get connected with this? Will you tell us all about this?
Oh, Experience House, my little oasis. I found out about this about a week before it started. I had just come back from being on the road. I was on the road a little bit last summer, most of the summer in the van, and I wasn't touring, but I was traveling. And when I came back to Nashville, I knew I wanted to finish writing the album. I knew I needed like a month or so to just kind of like stay in one place and do that. And then I got an email from this person that I'd never met. And he was like, hey, somebody recommended you for this Experience House. I think you'd be a good fit. You should check it out. Let me know if you're interested. And when I looked into it, it was this co-creative, co-living house in Morocco with 25 to 35 people. And it was basically just going to be like an experiment of what co-living can be like and what co-creating can look like. And I have always wanted to go to Morocco, and I was supposed to go to Africa for my 30th birthday.
Yes, that got canceled. I remember this. Oh, so heartbreaking.
So that was like a big pandemic bummer of not being able to. I was supposed to go to Africa and Antarctica, and those were the last continents that I needed to check off. And I was
so upsetting.
Going to do it before I turned 30. And then the world shut down and I didn't. And so this was like a weird, like, oh man, I could go to Africa. I can have this space to create for a month, which is what I need right now. And again, like coming back to the breakup, like getting back to Nashville just sucked. Like,
I bet.
I hadn't been here alone for a very long time, and I just didn't feel great. And I wanted to like do something wild to kind of like kick myself back into solo mode and like adventurous, positivity. And so it kind of just checked all the boxes very weirdly, and it was super serendipitous, but I said yes. And like a week later, I was on a plane going to Marrakesh for a month.
Insane. And were you able to create a lot while you were there?
I I was. I got a couple of songs written, and it wasn't what I expected. Like, I thought I would be a little more reclusive and, like, very yeah. much working on my own stuff every day. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot more collaborative. Like, I was pitching in on other people's projects and going to, like, mastermind sessions and classes that people were putting on. And it ended up being much more of a, like, self-discovery mm-hmm. journey and less of a, like, productive
yeah.
music thing.
That's so cool, though. And the area, yeah. like, it was amazing. I mean, it looked incredible.
It was so beautiful. It was wow. so beautiful. We went to the Sahara Desert for a weekend.
Crazy.
Oh, it was just, yeah.
I'm so glad you were able to do time. That. And I feel like it was an amazing reset for you. Mm. Okay, so before totally. We go, I'd like you to finish the story of Scotland and how you got out of that little bind you were in.
Oh, Scotland. Let's I really leave need to the... go back to Scotland to, like, redeem
myself. Let's leave
myself.
The listeners. Let's not leave them hanging like you did for all of us.
Okay, so where were we? Dark road, middle of the night, near Loch Lomond.
You've called your mother, and that's when you know it's bad.
That's when you know, yeah. yes. Especially because yeah. she Rock started bottom. Freaking out. And
oh,
she's
yeah.
like, oh, yeah. So she's like, the problem was my phone wouldn't, like, I could call my mom, but I couldn't call any numbers in the UK for some reason.
Okay.
So, like, I couldn't call to get help. And so it was this whole insane thing of me calling my mom, her calling the UK, like, police department,
being
like, can you find my little idiot American daughter? And somehow I was finally able to get a tow. It took like 3 hours, maybe 3 or 4 hours. They came and got me, and this beautiful, sweet Scottish man drove me to the next town. And from there, because they were going to have to take the car back to Edinburgh. Mm. And I was so determined to go to Islay, which is this little island that has two distilleries, two Scotch distilleries that make my favorite Scotch. Mm. And I really, really wanted to go. I'd booked this tour. I was like, I just need to get to this little town and get on the ferry and go do the Scotch tastings and everything will be fine. So the tow truck driver dropped me at this little town. I called a cab, and that cab took me like 2.5 hours to this little bitty town. Got to my Airbnb at like 3:30 in the morning, and I was supposed to be on the ferry at 7 a.m. They didn't have taxis in this town, and it was like this whole, like, I had to call my Airbnb host at 3:30 in the morning and be like, how do I get to the ferry tomorrow? And she's like, oh, call Jim down the road, he'll drive
oh,
you.
Wow.
So I called this Jim like at 6 a.m. And sweet Jim picked me up and drove me to the ferry, and I got there, and, like, I was the only one there. I was like, this is weird, but I go in and I'm like, I did it. I persevered, and I am going to go drink Scotch. And they were like, oh, hey, sorry, the weather's too bad. There's no ferries today.
So, I had so to you call called Jim again.
And I never got to drink my Scotch. And
wow.
I now
well,
I'm
this
to
is
go back
how
to
we
Scotland.
We really learn from Ira's story that it's not about where you go, it's the journey. It's not about
the don't rent the car, take the train.
Okay, well, Ira, thank you so much for coming on my podcast today. It was great to talk with you.
You
and
too.
And I'm very excited to hear these new songs.
Can't wait to share. Thanks for having me.
Totally.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. If you want to hear more from Ira, head over to irawolfmusic.com. There you will find her music, information about upcoming shows. You can snag some merch. Ira is also crowdfunding her fourth album right now. So if you want to be a part of that, the link on her website is also there. And as always, like and subscribe to this podcast, share with a friend, and thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of your day.